Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Well, autumn, just a couple weeks away, but you'd think it was August. It's hotter than blazes out there this week. The humidity is unbearable, at least to me. It has been an eventful summer weather-wise, with some unseasonable temperatures, severe thunderstorms, perhaps even a tornado or two. I don't remember, but I'm sure we did have one or two. We usually do. And then it's hurricane season still. Joining us on the show to take your weather questions is News Channel 13 meteorologist Jason Goff, WNYT News Channel 13. An Albany native, Goff joined the News Channel 13 First Warning Weather Team in 2004 after attending school at Auburn University and the University of Maryland. His first on-air forecasting job was in Corpus Christi, Texas in 2001. His forecasts have been broadcast right here on WAMC for years. Always great to have you back, Jason. Now that the track season just about, it's over now, or is it?
Yeah, it's over. It ended on Monday.
All right, good to have your undivided attention once again.
Yes, sir.
Number to call is 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also hit our Facebook page, WAMC Radio. You'll find a Vox Pop post there, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. You know, standing outside, taking the air just now, the heat and the humidity, it must be very similar to Corpus Christi, Texas weather.
It is. The difference is that it's like this down there every day for months on end.
God, how did you deal with that, Ben?
You know, I always maintain this because I grew up in Albany, but I think that somehow I was the stork got something wrong because I think I was born down south.
So you like it?
I love it. I really do. It's not, you know, Corpus was, that was intense now. I mean, I tell you, it's 90 plus degrees every day down there for 4 or 5 months on end.
Yeah.
And the humidity is really high. You know, you'll get fronts that'll come through usually right around this time of year, maybe in a week or two. The fronts will come through, and it'll be the first dry air mass of the year that'll show up. You know, you'll have a north-northwest wind, and it feels a lot better. But, you know, you just have to take it easy down there. I went out and played golf. I went out and cut the grass at 2 in the afternoon. You just got to drink a lot of water.
Okay, or something. Well, water's the best thing.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So what is it about the humidity level that makes it so much more uncomfortable? You always hear the old saying, oh, it's a dry heat. It's fine. It's 117. It's fine.
Yeah.
But why is it when it's 95 out and it's 100% humidity, it's worse?
Well, the thing is that our bodies cool off by sweating, okay? And when you sweat, those drops of salt and whatever else is coming out of your pores hangs out on your skin. Now, when those droplets evaporate, evaporation is a cooling process.
Right.
So that's how our bodies cool off. But when you have a lot of humidity in the air, when the dew points are high, there's really nowhere for that to go because the air it's not saturated. I mean, you're not going to have 100% humidity with 95 degrees, but the air, it just takes a lot longer for it to evaporate.
Yeah.
And that's why when you can't evaporate that sweat, you don't cool off, and that's why you feel uncomfortable.
And you like that.
I like it. It doesn't bother me. You know, you got to just, like I said, you just got to drink some water and hang out and do your thing. And especially for these parts, you know, we're going to be shoveling in a couple months. So we're going to have everybody keep that in mind, too.
And thank you for bringing that up. So, which brings me to El Nino. Now, again, what I know about the weather, you could mention in about a minute. But I understand that El Nino is strong this year.
That's the forecast, yeah.
Okay, and so also, folk wisdom, or I don't know, anecdotal evidence suggests that when it's a strong El Nino out on the West Coast, the weather is usually warmer in the Northeast. Is that true?
Yeah, it actually, what I did, I got into this one night. The weather was relatively slow, and I was reading an article about El Nino, and I kind of got into it, and I was crunching some numbers and looking back, and the 6th strongest El Ninos in the 20th century, I look back at those. All 6 of them were above average temperature-wise, but here's the clinch, the clincher. 5 of the 6 were above average snowfall-wise, too.
Oh.
Now, the exception was the 97-98 El Nino, which is, to date, is the strongest on record. We were well above average this time. I haven't looked at the document that I wrote a while ago, but it was, I mean, January, I think the average high in January was around 40 degrees or something like that.
So that we had a lot of rain.
Well, no, we were below average snow, but not by much. The amazing thing was I was living in D.C. at the time. I was going to Maryland.
Yeah.
And that winter, D.C. had a tenth of an inch of snow, which is incredible because, remember, a couple of years ago, they got pounded with snow. They had 80-something inches down there. So for them to get no snow that entire winter was really something else. And so, yeah, it generally speaking, it is meaning milder winters, and but not necessarily less snowy winters either. And I actually sent it over. The folks at the Weather Service office in Albany, they're fantastic. So I sent it over to the lead forecaster over there, Steve DiRienzo, and he sent me back a thing that he was doing some numbers too. And he said that the falls can be actually a little cooler, and there and Novembers can be somewhat snowy. Now, that's not to say that that's going to be the case this year,
right,
but it'll be something to check out.
That's interesting. So El Nino, and we'll get to the phones in a minute, 1-800-348-2551. So El Nino is a reversal of the trade winds. What is it exactly?
El Nino, it starts off as you have the Pacific Ocean off of South America, right? And the water out there is generally pretty cold because you get what's called upwelling, right? The deeper you go, the colder it gets,
right,
because the sunlight can't penetrate it. So there is some upwelling. There's some underwater currents that will bring that colder water to the surface. But every once in a while, you won't get that upwelling. So the waters warm up a lot. So for us, yes, the trade winds increase, which is why the Atlantic hurricane season generally, in an El Nino event or when one is developing, the Atlantic hurricane season tends to be a little less intense.
So it's wind shear that cuts them down?
It's wind shear that cuts them down, especially in the Caribbean and across the Gulf. It's the opposite in the Pacific because that water is so warm. The Pacific has been Hawaii has been watching hurricanes. I don't know. It seems like for the last 4 weeks straight, they've been watching storms, and they haven't gotten any direct hits, but they've gotten a lot of wind and rain and high surf and things like that. So
it's funny. Now, you mentioned hurricanes, and I know there have been hurricanes on the West Coast, but explain to me now the difference between a typhoon and a hurricane, and if they're the same thing, where do we switch names?
They are the same in essence, in terms of their structure and all of that, but it's a typhoon when it's on the other side of the international dateline. So if you're over in Asia, so a storm can become a typhoon once it crosses the international dateline and makes its way over to the Philippines or Okinawa or Japan or someplace like that.
I understand. So perfectly acceptable for a hurricane in Hawaii.
Yeah, it doesn't happen that often. They tend to luck out. The storms will either weaken or they'll kind of recurve around them. But you know, it's amazing because you look at like Bermuda out in the middle of the Atlantic, seems to get hit a lot, and Hawaii doesn't get hit very often. It does. Back in '92, there was a storm named Naniki that was a Category 5 storm that just hammered Kauai. But they generally escape the hurricanes more. I mean, they'll get some of the effects, but not direct hits.
All right, let's go to the phones. 1-800-348-2551. Jason Goff is our guest. Terrence in Greenwich, you're first. Terrence. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. This is not Terrence, right?
This is Karen. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's Karen. It says Terrence on the board. Anyway, Karen, you're on.
Yes, I have a question about the Farmer's Almanac.
Okay.
I have a couple of friends who have read the Farmer's Almanac, and they tell me that we're going to have another terrible winter this year with really, really cold temperatures and lots of snow. And I just don't want to believe that because last year was so terrible. I don't want a repeat of that. So I was wondering if there was any truth to that, and you know, maybe it's related to El Nino, what you were talking about just a minute ago.
Well,
here we go.
And I hope that nobody from the Farmer's Almanac is listening because I don't want to get sued. No, listen, there's a lot of really neat stuff in the Farmer's Almanac. I love the old kind of adages and some of the little legends and theories and things like that. And certainly now and all the way back, nobody knows the weather better than farmers do because they depend on that for their livelihood.
Right.
But the notion of putting out an idea of what a winter or any season is going to be that far in advance is just not feasible. And the Farmer's Almanac, and I did a paper on this in school at Maryland, and the Farmer's Almanac was abysmal. And you can go back and at any given time. This year, for example, the Farmer's Almanac said that we were not going to have an 80 degree day in the month of May.
Oh.
They were close. We had 16.
Oh boy.
So I wouldn't put any stock into the Farmer's Almanac as far as trying to forecast what the winter is going to be.
Very interesting.
Don't worry about it.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that. Maybe we'll have a mild winter. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Karen. We appreciate it. Now, the Farmer's Almanac, it's kind of like the Coke recipe. You don't really know how they make that prediction.
Yeah, I don't know, and I haven't put a whole lot of time into it, but we, I looked at a couple of different forecasting methods and then compare them basically in this paper, and the Farmer's Almanac was a distant third.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what was your data set? How many years did we go back for this?
I just took 2 years of the Almanac and went back and looked at all the data. And then I looked at what we call persistence. And persistence is, if you forecast in a persistence kind of a way that says that tomorrow is going to be the same as today, you're going to be right about two-thirds of the time. The Farmer's Almanac was not close to that.
You know, I'll remember that next time Cayano doesn't get his forecast to us before the morning news.
Okay.
All right, let's take a break. Jason Goff is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. Hubbard Hall Center for the Arts and Education in Cambridge, New York, presenting The Red Guitar, a musical journey through a life in rock and roll, written and performed by guitarist John Sheldon, September 19th and 20th, hubbardhall.org. Saratoga Saddlery, Saratoga Springs, New York, an equestrian lifestyle boutique featuring cowboy boots by Lucchese and Ariat for women, men, and kids on Facebook and SaratogaSaddlery.com. Clipcentric, Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV, albany.clipcentric.com. Manny's TV and Appliances, family-owned since 1977, now offering olive oil from his vineyards in Crete, available at Atkins, River Valley Market, Randall's, Foster's, and Big Y grocery stores, mannysoliveoil.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, 100 Watervliet Avenue, Albany, New York, specializing in local and organic produce, natural groceries, fine cheeses, locally raised meats, and ready-to-go organic meals, honestweight.coop.
Vox Pop on WAMC. We talk weather every now and again with Jason Goff from News Channel 13, and always nice of Jason to take some time out. You're going to be back on the air, right?
Yep, I'm going to be headed into the station after I leave here.
Okay, so hopefully you will not be too shell-shocked from all the calls. Let's go back to the line at 1-800-348-2551. David in New Paltz. David, you're on.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for doing a good job now.
Thank you.
So I have two related questions. One of them is when you listen to the weather every day, some days we lose daylight by 1 minute, and some days we lose it by 3 minutes, and some days even four. What is that all about? And also, do the leaves change because of the lack of daylight or because of the frost or the cold?
I'll answer your second question first. The leaves actually change because of the lower sun angle, so that the leaves can't take in the sunlight, which they I haven't taken a plant biology class in a long time. But
photosynthesis?
The photosynthesis and the chlorophyll that they use to basically sustain the leaf systems, they're not able to basically transform that sunlight in because it's not as intense. It's
right.
not as – and the days are getting a little bit shorter. It's amazing that this year, because it's been so dry – a lot of leaves are starting to drop already, but they're not necessarily changing. I got a ton of leaves on my front lawn this morning. And then as far as how the daylight changes, you know, one day per this or that, basically what happens is the sun throughout the entire year makes a path from the Tropic of Capricorn in the southern hemisphere, crosses over the equator at spring. Then it makes its way up to the Tropic of Cancer in the summertime on the first day of summer, and then it makes that trek back.
Mm.
So as we're approaching now the first day of fall, the vernal equinox, or the autumnal equinox, I should say, then that sun is going to be directly over the equator, which is a 0 degree latitude. So you do get a little bit of refraction from the sun that, you know, it takes a little bit of extra time for the sunlight to reach different spots and things like that. As far as why we don't lose minutes per day, like in a uniform way? I really don't know the answer to that. I'd have to look that up. But it's, you know, it just suffices to say that the days are getting shorter. I'm sure there's a real reason for it, but I don't want to try to speculate and make something up, which I'm not very good at doing anyway.
Well, thanks, David. We appreciate the call.
Bye now.
Bye now. 1-800-348-2551. You mentioned the leaves dropping before changing because it's dry. Has it been an abnormally dry summer?
Well, here's the thing. It's been dry in spots. I mean, overall, it's really dry.
Yeah.
DEC actually came out yesterday, as far as New York goes, and said, hey, if you're burning any brush doing some fall cleanup, be really, really careful.
Huh.
I mean, all the way out to leather stocking, it's dry, but especially in eastern New York, the Hudson Valley, the upper Hudson Valley, it's been really, really dry because the only rain that we've really had has been scattered. So you can look and say, well, we had 2/3 of an inch of rain at the Albany Airport. Yeah, but I didn't get any at my house in Niskayuna, and that's only, you know, a couple miles away.
Yeah.
So that's the way that it's been. More of us have been dry than not. But we do have some pretty much, I don't want to say wholesale changes in our pattern coming, but it's going to get not, you know, it's going to be not nearly as hot, and we are going to have some more widespread rains tomorrow and then again perhaps on Sunday.
So tomorrow figures to be rainy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Let's go back to the phones. Mark in Albany. Mark, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I want to discuss the relation of weather and climate. Weather varies day to day. There's 20-plus degrees difference between day and night. Climate changes on a time scale of decades.
Right.
So it increases very gradually. But the scientific consensus on climate is overwhelming and unequivocal, according to, for example, the 2012 statement by the American Meteorological Society.
Right.
Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am.
Do you have a question?
Yeah, the question is, considering the gravity of the situation and considering that the public looks to meteorologists to understand what's happening in the atmosphere, do you agree that meteorologists have a responsibility to explain that the climate is changing, that the increasingly severe weather that we are seeing, the increased droughts, heavier floods that we've seen, two cities flooded in the U.S.
All right, we get it.
Right.
All right, we got it. All right, let him answer.
Yep.
It's related to greenhouse emissions.
Yes. Now, here's the thing, though, Mark. In reality, it's on doing this on television. First of all, it's not feasible because we simply don't have the time to do it. I actually did a 30-minute special. The family that owns WNYT News Channel 13 owns some stations across the country, and they asked all of their stations to do a special on climate change. And it wasn't, you know, like a one-sided thing. It was talking to, presenting both sides, which is what we in the news do. So I did that, and I really enjoyed doing that and talking about, you know, the pros and cons of it. So, yeah, meteorologists, of course, it is their responsibility to look at the possibility of all of these things. But as far as on-air meteorologists, it's a little bit of a different story, not only because of the lack of time, but because this has become such a hot-button issue that you have a lot of folks on both sides now that are going to disagree with what you're going to say. And it's just a battle that cannot be won at this point in time. It is one of those things that has gotten so political and so divisive. My response to all of that is science is not a deli. You can't pick and choose what you want. So we're going to let the other meteorologists, at least for now, the 90% of meteorologists who are not on the air, handle this.
Let's go to Andy in Richmond. Andy, you're on.
Hi.
How's it going, Andy?
Doing fine, thank you. I'd like a definition of high or heating days and cooling days, which I keep hearing on the newscast or the weather.
Okay.
All the time.
Yeah, heating and cooling degrees days are ways for the energy sector to quantify how much energy is going to be needed, either for heating or cooling, and it's based on a 65, the number 65. So here's the thing. Let's say that we have a high of 80 degrees and a low of 40, Okay, that might be something that you would see in maybe late March on a really dry, warm day. So you average those two out, that gives you an average of 60 degrees. You subtract 60 from 65, that gives you 5 heating degree days. Now, on a day like this, where we have, let's say, a high of 90 and a low of 70, that gives you 160. Divide that by 2 is 80. That gives you 15 cooling degree days. So it's just a function of how much energy is needed, and different parts of the country get their energy from different sources. Down in Texas, where I lived, you can get they pretty much use natural gas to generate.
Yeah.
Down south, it's coal. Around here, it's natural gas or heating oil or electricity, especially for cooling. So it's just a function of how much of a load is on the energy sector that way, and that's just a number and way to do that.
Okay, great. I would suggest that you define this every now and then on your weather forecast, because a lot of people don't know what that means.
That's a good idea. You know, and I must say, Andy, that we do get this question at least once per show every time.
Yeah, we do.
On.
So that's a good idea.
Thanks
we'll
a lot. I appreciate the call.
Bye.
1-800-348-2551. Is it really that worthwhile to even use that?
It's not anything that has to do with forecasting per se. Again, if you're an energy trader, it's good. Or, you know, I mean, certainly a lot of folks keep track of their energy. I mean, I use natural gas, so I keep track of the number of therms that I use every month for heating and all of that. And
but, I mean, you're not going to change your usage, are you, based on the heating degree days? If you use more when it's freezing,
I mean,
right?
You have to use more. I keep my thermostats at specific temperatures and, you know, cooler in the winter. And, you know, you've got to do what you got to do. So, yeah, you can get a measure and say, well, my heating bill was a lot higher this year. Well, then you can go back and say, well, here's why. Here's the heating degree days are a lot higher.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to Ed in Ackard. Ed, you're on.
Oh, hi. Yeah. I called because I had some questions about the effect of melting fresh water off of Greenland, slowing down the Gulf Stream, and also a pool of cold water in the Atlantic affecting our cold winters that we've had recently. I read something about that and couldn't quite follow it. But I had a couple of other brief comments. One is, I believe when Paul Cayano reads the sunrise and sunset data, he's going off of charts that round it to the minute. And I believe it is pretty much uniform, accelerating slightly towards reaching a maximum change during the equinox and a standstill at the solstice, more or less.
I think that's right, yeah.
And as for climate denial, it's about 3% of scientists that say, oh, there's no climate change happening. And there's pretty obvious funding from Donors Trust, which launders money from the Kochs and Exxon, et cetera, to fund climate denial outfits. But to me, if there is really cooling, and I also was interested in the, you know, some of the deniers say, oh, there's going to be a cooling due to sunspot activity. Well, then why wouldn't we be harnessing as much solar and renewable energy as we can right now while we can, and saving the fossil fuels for this imagined, real or imagined coming cooling? But my main question is and was and still is about the effect of the Gulf Stream slowing down and a cold pool of water in the Atlantic from ice melting off of Greenland somehow affecting the cold winters we've had, that plus the destabilization of the Arctic jet stream.
Okay, it's a long preamble for the question, but go ahead, Jason.
Well, here's the thing now, just to let everybody know what the Gulf Stream is, the Earth is always trying to even itself out. Right, in terms of temperatures and everything. So you have the Gulf Stream that transports warm water up from the equator poleward. It actually scoots, it's at its closest point to the United States around West Palm Beach down in southeastern Florida, and then it comes up. And then it kind of peels off of the U.S. coastline around North Carolina and heads out toward the British Isles. Then on the other coast, you have the what's called the California Current. And that brings cold air, or cold water rather, down from the poles. So there is this, the theory out there is that you have these melting freshwater glaciers, and that is going to deflect the Gulf Stream farther to the south, which would make especially places like Great Britain, like Newfoundland, Canada, and the, you know, and the Canadian Maritimes a lot colder.
Interesting.
So that's the possibility that you're looking at with that. You know, again, we could make an entire show out of climate change and all of the associated things on that, but Well, we've got a lot of other calls, so let's jump on to those.
All right, let's go to Joe in Littletown. Joe, is it Middletown or Littletown?
Middletown.
Okay. It says Littletown.
Yes. What is Dewpoint, and why do we care? Why do they report it?
Oh, man, Dewpoint is huge. Relative humidity, I can't stand it. Relative humidity tells you nothing because you could have it might be 95 degrees outside, and then you have relative humidity of 45%. So you say, well, 45% humidity, that's not bad. Well, the dew point with that is about 73 degrees. Mm. So the definition of dew point is this. The definition of dew point is the temperature at which you cool a parcel of air to the point where it condenses. Okay? So that means that if you have a parcel of air and it's 73 degrees, you're going to have liquid water in it. That's really, really humid. And that's about as high as our dew points get around here. Once in a while, you might see a 75-degree dew point. So a dew point is a true measure of how much moisture is in the atmosphere, which, you know, the comfort level is one thing. When we're trying to forecast storms, models will take that into account, obviously. The higher dew points you have, the more fuel, basically, you have for these storms. So you're talking about the possibility of flash flooding. You're talking also about all of this other water vapor that's in the air that can really fuel those storms to keep on moving. So dew point is huge. I never, in my weathercast, I never use relative humidity because it doesn't tell me anything.
Higher the dew point, the more moisture in the air.
Yeah, once the dew point hits 60, you start to notice it a little bit. When you get into the upper 60s, it's really steamy, and low 70s, it's tropical time. Mm. So basically, 60 degrees is kind of that threshold.
All right.
Joe, great call. We appreciate it. 1-800-348-2551. Let's go over to Eric in Sunderland, Mass. Eric, you're on.
I just wanted to comment on a couple of things. One, the reason that the days get shorter at different lengths as the year goes on is that it's a sine wave. And when you are crossing the zero point, the rate of change is much higher than when you are at the top of the sine wave, which would be the solstices, where the rate of change is very slow at the top of the sine wave or at the bottom of the sine wave. But when you are crossing the zero point at the equinoxes, your rate of change will be as much as 5 minutes a day, or 4 minutes a day or something like that. But when you're up at the top, you know, at the solstices, it's going to be 30 seconds, maybe 10 seconds.
Wow, that's good to know.
Changes.
Yeah. I probably should have known that.
It's a perfect sine wave. And the further away you are from the equator, more drastic the sine wave becomes. It has a higher amplitude, but it has the same period as mathematics show. Also, if you want to get into the relative humidity, the wet and dry bulb thing is an easy way for the average person to do it by getting two thermometers. We used to do this in the Coast Guard. I was working with marine science technicians, and you'd swing the bulb around with a wet thing on one bulb and a dry bulb and compare the temperatures, and you could tell what the humidity was.
Yeah, that's old school. I like that. They're called sling psychrometers. I like those things. We used to do that in school as well, and now it's, with everything so computerized, you just say, oh, what's the dew point? And that's what it is. But I appreciate that, Eric, very much. Thanks for that explanation. That's probably something I should have known, and now I'll know it.
So basically what you're saying is, like the rest of us, all of our old school skills are atrophying because of computers.
Yeah, you would say that. But Eric's right. I mean, those sling psychrometers are really cool. And you just go out in the hallway, and literally you're slinging these things around, and however much moisture is in there will determine that, because it'll evaporate, like we were talking before about the sweat on your skin and whether you're comfortable or not.
Sounds like a good, favor for a meteorology party at the end of the year.
I don't know about that. Yeah. Some meteorologists are pretty wacky. I don't know if swinging things around or is much of a good idea.
Give Kovacic one of those. And All right, let's go to Marion in, I don't know what town you're in. I can't even read it. What town are you in, Marion?
I'm in Fultonville in Montgomery County.
So it's not Saturnville. All right, so you're on. Go ahead.
Once in a while, not very often, but once in a while, you hear when they're discussing the weather that the climate has increased 1 degree, and it seems so very serious, and I think, 1 degree, that's not very much. What is the background or the research that is 1 degree so serious?
Yeah, that is a great question, and I'll tell you why, and a little background with that. It drives me nuts when you hear things and people try to put things into context, and they'll say, this hurricane has the same amount of energy in it as 100 you know, nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
What does that mean? It doesn't tell me anything. You have to be able to relate this to folks. And so you're absolutely right. You say 1 degree. All right, well, what's the difference between 41 and 42? You know what I mean? It's not a big deal. But here's the thing. You're talking about hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of measurements in temperature. So you have a lot of data that are there that are going to be crunched. And the more data that you have, the more things that you have to look at, the more difficult it is to have those things move, right? So if you if you're averaging two things and you throw a third in there, you're going to see that average move quite a bit. But if you're averaging thousands of things and you throw another temperature in there, it's not even going to register. So the fact that the entire temperature has come up to that level, that's huge, because then that means that all of those numbers have come up.
Ah, interesting.
And that's how that all works, because it's just because you have so many data points that, you know, these things are going on, so that if the climate is raising up 1 degree, you know, and you think about it, like if you're outside, especially in the springtime, and you've got a mound of snow or ice or something on your porch, and you get even just a little bit of sunlight on there, and even if the temperature outside comes up a degree and it's 34 instead of 33, that's going to melt a little bit more.
Marian,
and that's a huge deal.
Thanks a lot for the call. We'll take a break here. 1-800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Jason Goff is our guest. We will be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Whitney's Farm Market and Country Gardens, Cheshire, featuring pavestone to help construct outdoor living spaces, walkways, retaining walls, pool decks, edgers, fire pits, and more. Whitney'sFarm.com. Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking. Rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires. AshfieldStone.com. SPAC, presenting the Saratoga Wine and Food Festival and Concours d'Elegance, September 11th through 13th, featuring chefs Josh Kappen, Ellie Krieger, Rick Orlando, and sommelier Josh Wesson, SPAC.org. Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston, RhinebeckArt.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche, QFCC.com. And Haydenville Woodworking and Design, a group of artisans designing and building renovations, additions, new homes, custom cabinets, and furniture for over 30 years. HaydenvilleWD.com for virtual portfolio.
1-800-348-2551 is the number. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by News Channel 13 meteorologist Jason Goff. And boy, the lines are loaded, as they always are when Jason is here. Let's go to Jim in Malta. Jim.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This nice winter-type weather we're having out here.
I'll say.
To ask this question, I'm about to in next month get my season pass for Gore. And I'm wondering, at this point, can you have any idea what kind of a winter we'll be having?
I can't.
Will it be cold so we can make snow?
Well, like we talked a little bit before about El Nino, and again, we have such a small data set. But if this El Nino continues to strengthen as it's forecast to do, and it follows the other El Nino year, stronger El Nino years that we've had, the winter will be milder than average, but it will also be fairly snowy. So we'll.
Perfect.
I don't know about making snow, but maybe you'll have a lot of natural snow and you won't have to worry about it.
Hey, Jim. You ever notice how most meteorologists, they're very hesitant to go beyond 3 days in their predictions?
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, it's only a $200 investment because I'm over 70, so it's not a big loss if it's not great.
Okay, hey. Well, you'll be all right. They get it right up at Gore, so I think you'll be okay.
Enjoy the season, my friend.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Thanks a lot. Let's go to Robert in Albany. Robert.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I watched Jason Goff on WNYT.
Well, cool. I appreciate that.
I'm a loyal watcher of Channel 13, WNYT. Actually, I've been on it. I was interviewed on it. But so I'd like to ask, actually, let me ask your question, my question, I mean. Actually, there's a Jewish holiday called Sukkot, you know what I'm talking about? And Sukkot is a holiday for the fall. And I believe this year it's on September the 27th, where Jewish people, they put a hut up, and usually by that time, it's cool. It's So the Jewish holiday goes from September 27th to October the 4th.
Okay.
Okay.
And, or the 3rd, I think. Anyways, by that time, since I just said the dates to you, will it be like more like an appropriate September where there's no sticky weather, where...
Well,
I'm asking about the timeline of the change of seasons, and if you've been doing this a long time, you should be able to...
That's a lot of pressure to put
on. Have an idea of when it's going to... The humidity is going to break away and won't come back. That, because I heard what you said last night about how that the 90-degree heat wave today, we're having the 3-day heat wave, as you predicted.
Yeah.
That it's not really...
Yeah, it's not
normal.
Something... Right, it's not normal. We haven't had that since 1973. But by the end of September, certainly we think that, it's going to start to cool off. The average high for the end of September is 66 degrees, so I think we'll be all right.
But I want to ask you something else.
Very
before
quickly.
You go, I appreciate it. Sure. So you said you live in Texas. You live in Texas, is that what you just said?
Yes.
So I hope you could talk about how the seasons are different down there than in the Northeast. We have a fall here.
Oh, yeah. Texas
I'm
is
talking about the heat and the humidity. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay. Yeah, Texas is hot, and then it's not as hot, and then it gets hot again. That's basically the seasons, at least down in South Texas, with plenty of humidity to match.
All right, Robert, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go to Frank in North Adams. Frank, you're on.
Hello, Frank.
Frank.
Oh, this is Tony.
Hey, okay, Tony. It says Frank, but the way things are going,
I'd like to ask Jason a question.
Okay, fire away.
Okay. What do you think of why the hurricanes are dissipating so quick this year? Let me shut my phone off and turn my radio back up.
All right, 10-4, Tony.
All righty.
Frank, whatever.
So, Tony, a couple of different reasons for that. One is that the storms that have been coming off of the African continent, especially... we had a few earlier in the season that were drawing in a lot of dry air from the Sahara Desert because you get these storms that'll roll off of the African coast and then they'll pick up some steam. But if they're ingesting a lot of dry air, that's like death to a hurricane. They want a lot of humid air. You have the latent heat of condensation and all that stuff to feed them. The other part is what we were talking about with El Nino tends to increase wind shear in the atmosphere. And if these storms can't really, what we call, get vertically stacked, they really get sort of symmetrical and they can breathe, and they really are living things. And then they will not be able to kind of line themselves up and be, you know, just like anybody else. You know, if your back is jacked up, you go to the chiropractor. Well, that's kind of the way that I think about it. So if a hurricane is kind of crooked from top to bottom, it's not going to be as efficient. And in essence, it's going to fall apart. So that's what's been happening this year.
So the last few years, we've had less hurricanes, right?
Yeah. It's been, you know what's amazing? Florida has not been hit by a hurricane since 2005.
Wow. And
that's
how
incredible.
Abnormal is that?
I'd have to go back and see, like, if this is the longest stretch that Florida has gone. North Carolina is the state that gets hit by the most hurricanes in the country, but Florida obviously is a second. You have 1,300 miles of coastline because, you know, in the Gulf and then on the Atlantic side. So, but for it to not get hit by a hurricane in 10 years is amazing.
Let's go back to the phone lines. And Hans in New Windsor. Hans, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
You're on.
I just wanted to ask Jason if he can tell me, do any of the senior meteorologists or people he respects ever pay any attention to chaos theory in long-range predicting, or have they basically given up beyond 4 days?
Well, no, it's not necessarily the point of giving up. It's what we're looking at with chaos theory is it's become more popular, and the problem with chaos theory is that it's difficult to nail down, right? I mean,
it's kind of chaotic.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that's right. So the problem is that, you know, when you're looking at forecasts and I'll give you a quick thing. Our viewers are our customers, right? And our viewers want a 7-day forecast, and that's what we give them, right?
Right? You got that right. When it doesn't rain, when Natasha wants it to rain, she says, they promised rain. What's going on
and
here?
It's Jason's fault.
I said, honey, it's 4 days. It's beyond.
That's right.
It's a butterfly effect. I mean, but we have gotten more accurate. I mean, you have numbers on that, right?
Yeah, certainly the accuracy has gone up. And people, you know, they have kind of skewed memories about, you know, you guys are always wrong. Well, you know, they remember the one time that something happened that it shouldn't have. But the fact of the matter is that within 24 hours, we're correct 92% of the time.
Right.
That's pretty good,
that's
I think. And as you get farther down the road, trying to forecast. There are so many variables in the atmosphere, and we just can't account for them all. We're making estimations in between
points. Well, you have a big, I'm sorry, Jason, but you do have rather large computer programs. I mean, it's probably the most difficult science in the world to go out beyond a week.
Oh, yeah.
Consider the butterfly effect. I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with that. A butterfly flaps its wings in Hong Kong, and 3 years later you have El Nino in the West Coast and then a hurricane. It's possible.
Well,
but you just can't follow all the variables. We can't without a big computer.
Exactly, and the computing speed is still not fast enough. That's the weakest link in the chain, and it's really fast, but it's still not fast enough to account for everything.
Thanks, Hans. We appreciate it. And the computers come into play when a hurricane is approaching, and then you have, what, three different models using three different sets of computers?
There's all kinds of different models that they use. We use the ship's model, and the Navy had a model that they don't really use much anymore, but you have the ship's model, and then you have the European model and the GFS and all of that. And when you have a particularly difficult situation with a storm, some other plane, because you have the regular hurricane hunters, right? They're part of the Air Force reconnaissance.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have a NOAA plane, which is Department of Commerce, and they'll actually fly at higher altitudes, the Gulf Stream, and they fly at higher altitudes, and they'll also gather data to feed into the models to try to figure out what's going on. So, the more data you have, the better the forecast is going to be.
Right, so the more information you pump into the computer, the better off you will be.
Right, as long as it's not too much.
Now, when one of those computer models, now I forget which hurricane it was, one of the big ones that came up, whether it was Irene or Sandy, but the European model was actually dead on, right?
Yeah, it was Sandy. Yep. And that was embarrassing for the United States. So Sandy came up and the Euro nailed it and the GFS did not.
Hmm.
That's all there is to it.
Let's go to Richard in Schenectady. Richard, you're on.
Okay, thanks. Hi guys.
Hi.
Now, if you would ask me to predict or to give an estimate as to how many days in this area we have 90 degree or above temperatures, I'd say 4 to 6. But last night on the weather, I heard it's 10. That seems unusually high. Am I the only one who thinks that?
No, we've had 8. Well, today would be 9. And the average in any given year is 10.3 when you add up all the numbers for Albany to have 90-degree days. The most we've ever had in 1 year was 32. It was back in 1955. And we had only 1 year, 1998, where we had no 90-degree days.
Huh.
So, but the average is 10. Last year we had 4.
Has that been increasing in general over the years?
No. Last year we had 4. It's been on and off, but no, there's certainly been no big anomalies in terms of going to and from that center point of 10.
How about tornadoes? Say 50 years ago, the frequency of tornadoes in this region compared to today?
I'd have to go back and look at some of those numbers there, but certainly there have been. An anniversary of the biggest tornado to hit this area hit in 1960, crossed right over State Street in Schenectady, and then made its way toward Clifton Park. And that was, again, that was in 1960 before you had a lot of the growth up there with different housing developments and Clifton Country Mall and all that. If that tornado had hit today, man, it would be big time bad. So, you know, we've had tornadoes here that have been particularly bad. Of course, the Mechanicville tornado, the way that one in Duanesburg last year, the Great Barrington tornado in 95. And then we had the one last year that hit out in central New York where 3 people were killed. So, you know, we have to deal with them in here. I mean, it's not Alabama or Oklahoma, but we certainly get tornadoes here. We got to be prepared for them every year.
Well, let's go to Joe in Coxsackie. Joe, you're on.
Hi, Jason. I'd like to ask you about the state of the science of the Arctic Oscillation and the North Atlantic Oscillation and whether you use that to factor in local weather.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The North Atlantic Oscillation is huge for us in determining whether the door is open for us to get any kind of a coastal storm, which is where all of our big snow comes from. If it's what we deem to be negative, that is, if you have the axis of it, it's oriented from northwest to southeast, that can tend to draw the storms closer to the coast. If we have more of a progressive pattern where the NAO is positive, then it's oriented from southwest to northeast, and that tends to carry storms farther out to sea. So that's not to say that every time we go negative that we're going to have a nor'easter. It just gives us an opportunity to have that. So, yeah, that plays a big role for us.
Is that what you mean by a trough?
No, well, that is a different troughs are a little bit more common than the oscillations in the North Atlantic. They're a little bit more, I don't want to say that they're semi-permanent, but they tend to hang out for longer periods of time in what we would even deem like a pattern. So we could get a pattern shift in the winter where we would have the oscillation go from positive to negative or vice versa. But a trough is any kind of a dip in the jet stream or at any level of the atmosphere. And that's just a little spot of low pressure. We're going to have a trough over us here as we head toward the weekend, which is going to cool us off and also bring us the opportunity for some rain. So troughs of low pressure are just a lot more common than, say, changes that would occur in the North Atlantic oscillation patterns.
Joe, thanks a lot. Our guest today is Jason Goff. How many broadcasts do you do a day?
Two.
Two.
We do 10 o'clock on our sister station, My 4.
Is that live?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I always got the impression on the extra channel or the sub channels that you have that they were just taped and you threw them on.
Well, the one that is on 13.3, those segments are taped because they're constantly running. We wouldn't be able to keep people to do that live.
Right.
But the newscast that we have on My 4 at 10 o'clock is certainly live. It's Jim and I are there, and Rogers and doing sports.
I hope they're paying you more. I mean, they make you do more broadcasts.
Yeah, if my forecasts are right, I get paid. If I don't, then I don't.
Oh, really?
That's the way things happen.
All right,
yeah.
Fair enough. Let's go back to the phones, and let's go to Professor somebody that I can't read his name in Williams College. Hello, you're on.
Yes, hello. This is Jay Pasikoff calling.
Ah, okay. That's not on the sheet. All right, go ahead. You're on.
Well, I'm the professor of astronomy at Williams College, who studies the sun in particular. So I know somebody called a while ago while I was driving in to ask why the days are getting shorter by sometimes 1 minute, sometimes two, sometimes three.
Splendid.
So if nobody answered it between then and now, I can go ahead.
Go ahead, man.
On many globes, you'll see figure eight, a lopsided figure eight, which they usually put just in the Pacific Ocean because it's a blank area there. And that is how much earlier or later the sun is than the average, and also, as you did mention before, what its latitude is, whether it goes up to 23.5 degrees above the equator or 23.5 degrees below the equator, because the Earth is tilted 23.5 degrees. Of course, we're going around. The sun is staying still.
Right.
And we're going around a little bit of an ellipse. So that means we go faster when we're a little closer, which is actually in January, and we go a little slower when we're further away in the summer. So sometimes at noon, the sun is not really due south. It's a little, it can be 20 minutes ahead or 20 minutes behind, and there are some sundials that correct for that. So anyway, when we come close to the summer solstice, the sun is at 23.5 degrees, And just the way the angle of the Earth is combined with the speed of the Earth around the sun in its ellipse, it stays more or less the same length of a day for a few days,
mm-hmm.
and then it begins to drop slowly, and so maybe that's 1 degree a day, and then for a while it could be two and a half, three. So some days you're only giving it without a decimal. So sometimes it's two, sometimes it's three.
All right.
As we get closer to the solstices, to September 21st and March 21st, it's going faster, and we lose or the other half of the year gain more minutes per day.
Gotcha. All right, well, beautiful.
Thank you very much.
Out of time. In fact, we don't need a sundial to tell you that we are out of time. And thank you, Professor, for that call. Jason Goff, great to have you here.
Thank you, sir.
And you ever see Weiland?
Oh, I see him all the time.
All right, you got to tell him he's got to get on the Mets train. Enough with the Yankee talk. This is the season of the Mets, all right?
I will definitely let him know, yeah.
Pass that message along.
Yeah,
so you'll be on tonight at 10 on My 4 and then at 11?
11 on News Channel 13.
Great to have you here, man. And
Thank you.
We will see you soon, I'm sure. Support comes from the 2015 Saratoga Showcase of Homes, celebrating 20 years of new homes from builders in the Saratoga region, September 19th through October 4th. SaratogaShowcaseOfHomes.com for tickets. Pave, tile, wood, and stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. Columbia County Tourism, with fall season activities including country festivals, apple picking, scenic foliage cruises on the Hudson River, columbiacountytourism.com. Saratoga.org. Saratoga Chamber Players, bringing musicians together from Europe, Asia, Canada, and the U.S. since 1987, with a concert September 20th at 3 p.m. at the United Methodist Church, SaratogaChamberPlayers.org. Thanks again to Jason Goff. Thank you for listening. Thanks for all the great calls. We appreciate them very much. Thanks to Zach Malloy at the controls. Your phones were answered by Dina Salzman and Hunter Harrison. And our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Have a great day. Tomorrow, we'll see you for another exciting and informative show, perhaps.